Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 19, Jet Sanoti, and today it's June 5th, 2023. Jet Sanoti is a Renaissance woman, a multidimensional artist, wardrobe stylist, and creative director. She was prescribed Xanax for panic attacks and SSRIs over 7 years ago. After 10 years using prescription drugs as prescribed, she quit cold turkey without knowing anything about safely coming off of benzodiazepines. Hi, Jess. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Neftal. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So tell me, how did benzodiazepines come into your life?
Well, I was prescribed benzos at, I think, 17 or 18 years old. I had been having just multiple panic attacks and ending up in the ER many times, and the doctors basically told me, you have panic disorder and we have this miracle drug that helps with panic disorder. So, you know, take this. And that's really all they didn't do much inquiry. And that's really all they suggested. And, you know, at that age and in a panic, I didn't really question the doctors. So I just took it, and that's where it began. And I was taking Xanax, and I don't remember actually like what the trajectory of my like the dosage I was taking, but I know it fluctuated throughout.
And how long were you on it?
I was on Xanax for 10 years in total, on and off. I had tried to stop it in my early 20s, I believe at 21, because I had been seeing a therapist and she was like, hey, you know that these drugs cause rebound anxiety. So, you know, they'll start, the more you take them, they'll start to wear off quicker. And then once they wear off, like, your anxiety is going to come back even worse. And then she kind of freaked me out. And I stopped taking them cold turkey at 21, had a really terrifying experience, only, you know, was able to manage that for about a week. And then I went back on them. And it took a couple years. I was in a pretty hazy state for a couple years and still kind of like traumatized from that one week where I was off of them. And I was also on Zoloft for 8 years of, you know, within that time frame, and kind of was on a yo-yo of different antidepressants. You know, we tried Lexapro, which had me like literally sitting on my couch in college in my apartment, staring at a blank TV, like drooling, like, and I'm not even exaggerating there. And So I was just kind of like on a yo-yo of medications, and looking back, that just totally messes with your entire system, your mental health, and then your physical system. And so I was on Zoloft stably for like 8 years, on Xanax, I believe, for 10.
So, and when does the moment come for you when you're like, hey, I'm going to try to come off these drugs anyway?
Yeah, I think it was 27. So I was going through, and until that point, I was always taking them as prescribed. I was never abusing the Xanax. You know, I definitely took them for things I didn't need to be taking them for, like for a headache or a hangover or something like that. But I was never just trying to party with them or trying to get high off them. It felt more like I needed them, you know, to cope, essentially. So throughout those years from like 21 to 27, it wasn't even, it was almost like in case of emergency drug. Like sometimes it was daily, and then there might be a couple months where I felt like, oh, I don't need it as much. And it was more just like if I was nervous and had a long work day or something, I would bring it with me. And so they kind of became an in case of emergency drug throughout that time. And then at 27, I went through like a major breakup, and my depression was hitting like an all-time high. My anxiety was getting worse. And I was just really exhausted and stressed out from my work and my way of life. I was traveling a lot and working really long hours. And so I kind of hit a wall, and the Xanax became daily again at that time, probably like twice daily, three times daily. I think I was at 0.25 at that time, and I was using it to be able to sleep. But I noticed that after like 3 months or so, or not even 3 months, 1 month, it stopped working. Like my body totally stopped responding to it. And I had another, like, oh my gosh, like these, I don't think these are good for me if, you know, my body's not responding anymore. Like, what kind of drugs am I going to need to take that are, you know, much heavier than this? Like, what am I going to get into to help me if this isn't helping? And just kind of looked back on my trajectory of like the antidepressants and those not really like nothing ever, anxiety and depression never really being actually managed, just suppressed was kind of like what I realized at that time. I'm like, oh, I've been band-aiding this. I had that realization again. And I cold turkeyed again. There was just in that time of my life, I was very impulsive and very extreme. I wasn't stable, especially with that amount of depression and anxiety and the level of anxiety I had at that time. It was kind of just like, oh my God, these are terrible. I really need to stop taking these now and I'm done. So I literally, like one day, November, I think 14th, 2015, just stopped taking them and have a pretty strong will. So I like the desire for them stopped, like literally in that instant. But then, of course, I went through, you know, a pretty horrendous withdrawal that was like 10 times worse than it was when I first tried to come off of them.
And when did it happen, your withdrawal symptoms after stopping it? Like immediately or like a week later?
Yeah, I feel like it was within a couple of days. I'm trying to remember, probably a couple of days or a week, but it was definitely immediate. It was definitely getting like hit head on with symptoms and pretty immediately buried. But even then, I didn't ever think, oh, well, I'm gonna get back on the meds. So I just, you know, in that state of terror, I just had to figure out a new path,
And
essentially.
can you remember that, obviously you thought about it and quitting cold turkey. Did you have any expectations on how long the symptoms may have lasted for at the time?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I mean, 7 years later, I could have never, ever, ever expected it would have taken this long. Even 2 years in, I was like, are you fucking serious? Like, still? It's like still this intense. And of course, I wish I had known. I wish I had known in hindsight. And I have no regrets. So anytime I say I wish, like I'm totally in acceptance of my journey and how long it's taken. But I say that for like people that might be considering going off of them. It's just like if I had known, if I had been a little more stable at that time and maybe consulted a doctor, or I didn't, I mean, none of this, I'd never seen Benzo Information Coalition, Benzo Buddies, like CoHeal, like none of this, I don't know if it existed, and it was definitely not within my awareness. I wish I had known that there would potentially be a more stable path, even though I know a lot of people still have tons and tons of, you know, difficulty with tapering, but the
Right.
cold turkey is just so dangerous. Like I'm almost certain I had a stroke. So
Yeah,
I don't know.
so can you tell the audience how did it go when you were hit by this intense withdrawal? Like what were your symptoms at first, and take us with you in your like months and years.
I mean, initially it was like the feverish type of symptoms pretty quickly became like psychosis. I could just like envision myself. I was living in LA, running around LA, like trying to find like therapists and healers and doing all these different treatments and just like I would be like nervously like scratching my arms. Like I felt like a drug addict, you know, in a way, not to frame them in a bad sense, but I was never diagnosed bipolar, but I was like, I've certainly felt bipolar, you know, psychosis behavior. I experienced these extreme shooting pains from like the left side of my eye through my jaw, down my neck, through my chest, down my stomach, and down through my left leg. And they would just shoot back and forth all day long. And sometimes it would like stop in a point and like in my heart, and I would like black out. So I would black out often. Those shooting pains kind of stabilized and then became, not stabilized, but they became isolated pain in those areas in my body. So I just had extreme nerve pain over this time. That was probably one of the most debilitating symptoms. Definitely, like cognitive decline was really fuzzy. It was really slow. A lot of depersonalization, just like absolutely did not know like if I was in reality or if I was awake, if I was dreaming. I would have to like ask my mom all the time. I'd be like, "Are we, is this really happening right now? Are you really here right now?" Like, I was just really confused all the time.
Right. And
And
were you like at home trying to recover? Were you working? What was going on with you?
yeah, for the first year and a half, I was still in LA working pretty intensely. I was kind of, I became really insistent on like healing and doing it by myself. I was like, I can't, depend on anyone. I've got to do this by myself and I've got to find another way. And I actually decided at that time to also pivot my work, and
Wow.
so I was doing, like I was creating photo shoot, doing the things that I always kind of wanted to do before, and that I didn't feel like I had access in my creativity, when I was medicated. That was a really interesting kind of like side effect. But when I came off the meds, it was like a creative outpouring that was almost manic. But it was part of the healing process. So I kind of just went with it and started creating and started essentially building a new career for myself at the same time while still doing some of the old work and fashion styling that I was doing. So yeah, I was still traveling and blacking out at work and just like
Oh my
not
God.
sleeping, definitely just like deteriorating. But I would say one of my, strength and weaknesses is my like willpower and grit to like get through
Definitely.
that.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, so I
amazing
was
that
in
you did
LA
that.
for that first year and a half, and my mom would have to come up often and like sleep with me because I would there were just nights that were horrendous because insomnia was part of this. I would sleep like maybe 3 nights a week of like 4 hours of sleep, and the rest were like 24 hours of being awake. And my days were like 15-hour days. They were pretty long, and around a lot of people and driving around LA. So yeah, but after that year and a half, I definitely, my body just kept screaming to me like, I can't take one more gig. We're gonna die. Like, I'm gonna fucking die. So eventually I got the message and had to move back home with my parents, had the blessing to be able to do so. Not easy on the ego, to be moving in with my parents in my like late 20s or my 30s. So yeah, after that year and a half, I came home. And yeah.
Okay, and you described that, after your cold turkey, in some way, you're kind of like overflowing with creativity. What were you doing at the time with your creativity?
Yeah, so my background is in fashion styling. So for like big brands and commercial brands and advertising and fashion magazines and celebrities. So that's what I did for a decade. I went to fashion school. But I didn't ever like to be like called like just a stylist. My creativity felt like it was kind of boundless, and my true zone of genius is just visual storytelling. And so I always wanted to create my own photo shoots and tell stories through the photo shoots that were beyond like, this is the cool outfit I'm wearing. Like, there is a story behind it. So I started creative directing and producing and like styling my own photo shoots that would go just like on my portfolio or would go in like local magazines, and started building from that place. And then I started to get into like sustainable fashion and conscious fashion and started working with brands that were like within my new set of values. So that's how I was funneling it. I was also blogging. There was a lot of like mood boarding was like super healing for me. I just I never really connected the dots to like what poured out of me onto a mood board or what poured out of me creatively was an expression of what was going on inside of me. I don't know how I didn't quite understand that before. So it was like a way when I finally understood that and I just saw like everything I was creating was reflecting back to me, like what was going on inside of me. And that became very healing and very, you know, enlightening and brought a lot of self-awareness to my life. And just the process of like birthing the story from within was really healing instead of like keeping it, you know, buried inside of me and doing it in a medium that felt good and to me.
Right, right. So a year and a half later, you move back in with your parents. And I guess my first question would be, are you aware that you're in benzodiazepine protracted withdrawal at this point?
No.
Okay.
So I didn't know for sure until year five, which Whoa. I think what made it much longer because I just had no fucking idea what was going on. I had a sense of it, but you know, I had started seeing like a bunch of naturopaths and a lot of people in the holistic space while still seeing, you know, normal doctors that would just say, you just need to go back on meds for a year. And I was like, I can't, you know, something inside of me was like, I can't do that. So I went to naturopaths and they're like, maybe you have fibromyalgia or an autoimmune disease or it's chronic fatigue. And like, nobody would ever pinpoint or really acknowledge the Xanax within it all. And again, I always had a sense of it, but I didn't see any stories. I didn't see Benzo Information Coalition. I'd never heard anyone else talk about it. Not one person.
Right.
So
right.
I was kind of just like, oh, I'm an undiagnosed mess that just can't handle life. You know, like other people go through hard breakups and hard transitions and I just can't handle life. That's kind of what I thought for the first 4.5 years. And then I found Benzo Information Coalition at year five. And I was like, holy shit. You know, I like saw all the stories and all the information. And at that point I had finished a health coaching certification and was taking clients. And one of my clients was going through benzo withdrawal and walking her through that. I saw her go through everything I went through, like every exact thing. And I was like, oh my God, like it totally validated my experience. And I was like, this is a huge, huge part of what's been going on. But I didn't know that until year five.
And then you find Vic and, you know, you realize that it's the Xanax that was causing this. What happens next?
Well, I mean, it was funny too, because before I found Vic, I was like, or I found them and I was thinking like someone needs to be funneling this information out on an Instagram feed. They need to be like dissecting the information in a way that's really informative and really helpful for other people going through this. And then I reached out to the founder and I was like, hey, can I help you with like my skills of, you know, like visual communication and visual storytelling? And so I helped them kind of use the branding they already had and break up the wonderful, you know, and vast information they already have and build out the current Instagram feed that you have, that they have now. And we came up with the idea of making those short, you know, clips of benzo stories on there, because I think storytelling is so incredibly healing because people can really like, you know, see themselves in other people's stories and feel connected and less alone. So we came up with some content and I'm not doing that anymore, but I set them up with that kind of foundation and they're continuing it on and continuing on the beautiful work that they do.
Well, because you did that for the personal stories on the Instagram feed, I actually found a couple of guests, including yourself.
Oh, amazing. I love that.
Yeah, like really, like I think it's great. I think those stories are very powerful. They are healing, they're validating. And I am just amazed that I'm very grateful and thankful that there are so many people that really want to share their story because, you know, they're not okay with this still happening. So, yeah. So thank you for that.
For sure. And I think it's so important. Like we need to, like, I hope this gets out there to like maybe a doctor that is in disbelief of this and they see more and more stories and it might help change their mindset or just the mindset of society at large and eventually get to the government or pharmaceutical industry and just kind of create a
Yeah.
change. And I think it always starts with like the people and the people that have been through the experience. So it is really powerful.
Definitely, and I really do feel that, it's got to be us, screaming up there somewhere until someone
Yep,
hears us.
for
It's not
sure.
going to happen if we don't do anything, we really have to make the change, and I think we're all, including yourself, trying to make that change. So, great. Wonderful idea. How was your healing in terms of the journey at your parents? How did that go, that part?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I always like to say, because I've posted some videos on my Instagram about this, and a lot of people have reached out, and I think one of the main things to know is like healing is not linear. It's not like you go through an experience and then you're just like upward until you're healed. Like it's like 5 steps forward, 10 steps back, 15 steps forward, 3 steps back. It's like it's definitely not linear. Just like life isn't linear. So, of course, that's been my process. It's been like little, spurts of healing and then major reversion where I felt really like, oh, is this ever gonna, am I ever gonna heal and be past this? But, I'd say in the first 2.5 years, that was like the threshold. Like, I had like threshold experiences, still like high amounts of terror, insomnia, and pain. I was meditating heavily in that time, so I felt like my mental health got grounded within the first 3 years, which was like a huge blessing. And just like, how did that even happen? Going from like being bipolar to feeling more mentally stable than I ever had in my life. But that was about 3 years in. But then I found that the physical pain, the nerve pain and like the food sensitivities and the food allergies and just like the kind of overall like exhaustion and the inability, not inability to handle stress, but just like a stressful situation would take me out for a week, like being able to recover, I guess, from stress. Those things lasted for about 5 years, I would say. That's kind of when things started to get a little better. It's when I started pivoting, a little bit of my approach as well. I had been going at it very, I say that I took healing as my like full-time job at that time. I was like attacking it and I was like it super like I'm gonna make this healing happen, which I don't think was helpful at all. Now that I
Right, right.
back, there was no softness and reverence in that approach. Got me to a certain point, but so around year five, I like pivoted my approach a little bit. I like leaned back a little bit and softened a little bit, and I started to see slow improvement from that point. Like I'm at year 7.5 now, and the nerve pain has finally, it's only like a trace. I, for the most part, feel like I have my energy back. I definitely still have to manage my stress levels and my output, I think that's life in general, though, and a lesson that I am still learning. And like the food allergies and like ability to bounce back is much better now. I feel like I'm on the other end of it for sure. There's definitely like little bits of things that still flare up here and there, but those are just, messages to slow down or, pivot this or pivot that. It's just listening to the body and what it needs, but I'm definitely way, way past the being in the thick of it.
Right. And I see this happening to other people going through benzodiazepine withdrawal, including myself, I guess, is that for some magical reason, even though benzodiazepine withdrawal is just horrible, but sometimes for some magical reason, there's a calling, there is a creative aspect to us that comes out during or after. And could you elaborate a little bit more on how this happened for you? Because you kind of said like, oh, once I went in withdrawal, all of a sudden I was like overflown with creativity. How did you not know it was there? Did it just suddenly appeared?
Yeah, I mean, like I had said, I felt when I was medicated, there was just like a cap on my life, my creativity, my emotions. Like none of that was really there. I didn't feel like I could access it, even if I tried. So even though I had desires to like do other things in my life, but I just didn't seem to have the either the umph or the ideas or the couldn't access the way to move towards those things. But again, once I came off the meds, it was just like my body opened up again. It was like my sensations opened up again. My creativity opened up again. Like all of the color inside of me that was just like suppressed, you know, all the emotions inside of me that were suppressed came bursting out. So that's actually, you know, pretty overwhelming, which I'm sure a lot of people in benzo withdrawal, like, you know, this sensorial experience is like, holy shit, like this is like unbelievable. But then also the beauty that comes with it. And for me, that was the creativity and pouring it out into, like I said, like the fashion editorials and pivoting my career. It was kind of redefining my relationship with beauty and with style and fashion and creativity, because I feel like the approach I had been taking before was much more superficial and materialistic, and that never really settled with me. I couldn't access the depth with what inside of me. So throughout this process, I've been accessing that depth and communing with beauty more, and kind of just I call myself a Renaissance woman, which is a woman with like many different desires and passions and talents that never wants to just stick to one thing. And I want to like follow all my passions and like satiate my palate for all the creative desires that I have.
I love that. I love
Yeah.
that, by the way. I really do. I
Thank
love
you. And
it.
I found myself able to like actually do it, even though it was kind of manic in that time, but I was like just trying every fucking thing in the creative world. I was creating photo shoots. I did set design for a music video, which I'd never done. I was creating mood boards. I was blogging. I was writing, you know, taking PR trips sometimes for wellness retreats. So I was like, and then I was doing like health coaching degree. So it was just like my desire to learn and my ability to absorb it. Because I felt like when I was medicated, I couldn't remember what I read. Like I couldn't absorb information. I felt very slow and confused all the time. So I was able to like absorb information and then like alchemize it and create something with it. And it was just like a burst of it. It was a burst of color. It was a burst of pattern, a burst of life.
And I
But
think,
when
I
did
like that because
it
I think I have some overlap with you. And I think in some societies, it's very difficult to be wanting to do different things, you know?
And that's kind of the core of why I love calling myself a Renaissance woman. And I think there's underlying patterns to like why you go in to get the medication. Like there's an underlying pattern that we have to take personal responsibility for, or that might be like a societal thing that's we're suppressing. So like for me, I always felt like that. Like I had to stick to one thing. And everyone told me you have to stick to one thing to be successful. Like stop being all over the place and trying all these different things. Just stay at that one job, you know? And I was like, that felt like totally suppressive to my spirit, but
Soul
I listened.
draining. It's soul draining.
Yeah.
I
And
think
I
it's soul draining.
listened. So I think that was part of, you know, it was the medications as well, but like my letting other people and letting society like dictate who I am and what I should be. So therefore not really having a sense of myself and a self-awareness was also part of all of this. And like my, you know, lack of coping skills, not developing coping skills in my younger years and things like that. And looking at beauty a little more superficially, like all of those things I think contributed to my process. So this process of withdrawal and exploring has been me taking, responsibility for that and having to relearn who I am and what I stand for and what my values are and what I want to do in this life and how I want to be. And that's typically not within the status quo.
Right, right.
Kind of at this point, after the experience that I had of feeling so suppressed and feeling like listening to the doctor who's supposed to know everything, who went to college for however long and has a big degree, like listening to them and telling me what I need to do.
Like, right. I really do hope for our next generations that there will be a cultural change when we just tell our kids, even though I don't have kids, but that we tell the kids that the doctors just don't know everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to listen to yourself. And I think that's what I hope, us and people in our generation that are maybe having these shifts and these transformations, is we can start teaching the younger people how to access their intuition and have self-awareness and emotional intelligence so that they can source from themselves and know what is right for them, even if society or the doctor is telling them what they think is right for them.
Yeah, and I think we can learn a lot from the kids too, and young adults. Like, if there's some people, like with these younger generations, that are like, I want to grow up and brew beer and I want to do this, and it sounds crazy, but maybe nurture some of their desires,
for sure. And I think that'll be a fun test if I ever have children, to be like, oh my god, if she or he's a Renaissance woman or man, like, I have to use my own medicine on that and be like, nurture it instead of tell them what that you think they need to do and control it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, something that you mentioned to me was something about movement meditation. Could you tell the audience what that is?
Yeah, so like I said, I had found myself able to ground my mental health within that first 2.5 years through meditating. And like everything I did then, I was like aggressively meditating, like 1 to 4 hours a day. But I found like the profound benefits of that and feeling fully, mentally grounded and fully tapped into my, emotional intelligence and world. However, I found that like the physical, it was not helping the physical pain at all. Like all the tactics I tried to use in meditation, like visualization to like visualize the nerve pain going away and, all of that stuff, it didn't work at all for the physical pain and the physical symptoms. So I started to hear about embodiment, like somatic experiencing and like movement meditation. I didn't really know what that was, but that started to come into my world around year 5. And then synchronistically, I met my partner at that time, Sevi, who has a movement meditation practice called Workin. And so I started like practicing his movement meditation practice, and it was just so much more gentle and on the body, and it was just so much more nourishing, because like sitting in stagnant meditation, like just sitting here for hours and hours and hours feels, looking back, I'm like, that feels extremely unnatural, and it was not helpful for like the physical pain in my body. It wasn't providing like movement of the emotions and all of the trauma. So when I started practicing movement meditation, I just found it to, moving and breathing and meditating at the same time just felt more whole and complete in comparison to like all the other types of practices that I had done before. It's kind of hard to explain. Like, it's just, he's created, him specifically, there's different types of movement meditation, but he's created like specific movements that help hydrate the joints. And they're just like really simple movements. And he like leads you through a meditation and you like focus in on your breath as well. So it was just like being able to move all of it within being in that meditative state just felt so much more relieving, I guess I would say.
Well, that sounds great. I'm happy that you found something that really works for you and probably will work for a lot of other people. So I think that's great. So what are you currently doing?
I'm currently, well, I'm about to launch. What is today? Yeah, in 2 weeks, I'm about to launch my new website, Renaissance Woman, actually called Renaissance Woman. And that's my new business venture, something the seeds were planted 2 years ago, and I've taken a lot of time to slowly build it and put a lot of intention and love into it. And it was really, I had so much trouble in my life, like I said, like finding a way to put all of my like different passions and desires under one umbrella. So that's what this is. And the first round of offerings are going to be kind of like a mixture of my professional experience and styling, and then going through, learning about sustainable and conscious fashion and acquainting myself with beauty and creating a new relationship with it. So these are going to be personal styling offerings that have, a little bit of an embodiment twist that's really meant to help people source from within and be able to birth their stories from within and wear their story on the canvas of their own skin and feel like their inner expression is matching their outer expression. And, underneath all of that, really learning to trust ourselves and trust our intuition and know who we are, and speak from that place, with our stylistic expression. So that's the first round of offerings. And then I'm going to just be fluid from that place and see how that goes. And kind of like it's my, I call it a sanctuary of exploration to kind of just explore other offerings that I feel called to explore at any other point and to put out there. They might be creative offerings, they might be offerings on embodiment and sensuality and cyclical living. A lot of the things that I've been learning, all through these years. So yeah, it's Renaissance Woman, sanctuary of
Cool.
exploration.
Sounds very, very cool. Now, what I always ask my guests at the end of the show is if they would have specific advice for someone that is currently listening and is in benzo withdrawal.
I mean, I think the first thing I would say is it gets better. Like I know that when you're in the middle of it feels like it's never gonna fucking end, and you can't even fathom that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, trust me, I know I've been there. I've been to the point that a lot of people in this experience have been, where it's like I can't go on anymore. Maybe it's not worth it, and having those thoughts or taking those actions. But, I promise you it gets better. I'm living proof. You can not only recover, but you can feel even better than you did before. Like, know that you're not doomed, you're not broken, you're not chemically imbalanced forever. Like, all of these things can come back into balance. Like, your brain is adaptable and your body can heal and recover. And a lot of times through these experiences, there's a lot of beauty and like transitions in your life that put you towards a direction that you maybe have always been desiring deep down, or you wanted to move towards, or it might just bring more spirituality and depth and empathy and compassion into your life. So know that there's a lot of beauty within all of the devastation. That's kind of the paradox of life, the chaos and the creation and the beauty and the chaos. And within that, also just if you can, if I'm speaking to someone that hasn't already gone through the process or decided to withdraw, they're thinking about it, like get help, create a plan if you can, create a withdrawal plan. If anyone's considering it, I would check out CoHeal. If that feels like too much for you, just, do the best you can to create a plan. And I also always tell people, like, within that plan, like, consider the lifestyle changes that you can make before going through the process, like finding a spiritual practice, if it's like yoga or meditation or movement meditation, like whatever speaks to you, and like implementing that already, implementing any like dietary changes that might be helpful for me, like not having a lot of sugar and gluten and dairy was really helpful. Doing some research and do like implementing whatever might feel best for you beforehand so that those habits are already kind of created. And because I think they'll be incredibly supportive during the process. And then for people in the process, it's kind of what I said before. It's like, hang in there. Like, I promise it'll get better. And I think for everybody, it's different for everybody. Like, literally, every body is different. So it's finding what's going to work for you, whether that's movement, meditation, or yoga, or seeing a therapist. But like, definitely get support and surround yourself with support. It's out there now. It's more prevalent now, especially tailored support for like benzo withdrawal itself. Do your research, find an outlet if you can.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Jess, and I'll talk to you
Thanks
soon.
for having me. Okay, thanks,
Okay, bye-bye.
Naftal. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.